powerful or have some kind of tie to these specific statues. I haven't heard of any wizards on this side of the river, but I guess I can't discount the possibility. As one, all of the statues turned to stare at us, cocking their heads like a cat spotting a laser light on the floor. Another gargoyle's wings snapped out, knocking the head clean off of one of the others. Okay, friendly fire was a good thing. If nothing startles them, then they should fall just back asleep, I think. Just keep pace with the truck. Gunner nodded, focused on a goal. Then the truck swerved abruptly, and the driver honked his horn furiously as a car cut across a cross street just ahead of him. The gargoyles crouched, reacting defensively. We hadn't seen any other cars on the street, so the statues focused on the only sign of life near them. Us. I could see the hatred as they stared at us, and then they leapt out of the moving truck, landing like a group of paratroopers in a war zone, eyes wary and claws out. Gunner swerved as one of the gargoyles drew a club strapped to his back and swung it at us. The tip of the stone club screeched down the passenger side of the car.
I am definitely going to sue that driver, Gunner bellowed.
You can't. His truck said he wasn't responsible for falling debris. Gunner turned murderous eyes on me. I almost yelled for Gunner to floor it so that we can get away, but then I thought about these monsters loose in the city, left to do as they please.
Gunner, stop the car. We have to stop them.
He pulled the emergency brake, spinning the car in a 180-degree turn, so that we were facing the huddle of gargoyles.
Damn it, Nate! How the hell are we supposed to fight them?
He wasn't scared, just genuinely asking what we were supposed to do.
I will not ruin my car by running over them.
He folded his arms defiantly. Drama queen. The heads. I think if we can take the heads, they'll become inanimate again. Gunner cocked his Sig Sauer and climbed out of the car. Before they could move, his gun roared, blowing the head off the man with the club. I arched an eyebrow at him.
He scratched my car, Gunner growled.
My mother always said that a pistol is the devil's right hand. I grinned. Gunner smiled back, showing teeth. Then they began to break up, moving on us like well-trained predators. But they weren't expecting a wizard and a werewolf to crash their party. They were just looking for a little entertainment. If I had my way, the entertainment would be completely one-sided, leaving only a whole truckload of gravel behind. I suddenly had an idea, something my parents had briefly taught me, but that I had never truly practiced. I guess this would have to count. I yelled to Gunner,
"Cover me! But no matter what you see, make sure you don't shoot me."
Knowing my weirdness, Gunner just nodded, popping off a few more shots at one of the more demonic-looking gargoyles. I took a deep breath and instantly found the calm reservoir of power deep inside me. It actually helped clear my head a bit from the hangover. I waded into that power like it was a hot spring, allowing the tension to ease out of my muscles. I knew it took only seconds, but in my mind, it felt like an hour. Once relaxed, I began drawing that reservoir into me, through me, and then projected it over my skin like stone armor, doubling up over the most vulnerable areas. It was easier than I remembered. My skin felt like ice as the stone encased every section of my body, efficiently turning me into a stone version of myself. Statue Nate. Once satisfied, I opened my eyes back to the real world. The gargoyles had taken no more than a few steps. Gunner was efficiently picking off legs and heads where he could, but I knew it wouldn't be enough. There were close to a dozen of them. I glanced down at my stone hands in wonderment, twisting them this way and that. To any passerby, I most likely looked like a human statue, except that I wore clothes, and I could move. Neat, huh? I felt like a stone mannequin, and I knew that if I looked into a mirror, my face would still be there, but cast in stone. I could move without impediment, but with this armor I could take just about as much damage as one could dish out, but each hit tore off some of that shielding, so it was only temporary. I turned to look at Gunner. His eyes were wide as he looked from me to the statues, and then he began to laugh.
That is so cool. Why do you bitch about my power when you can do that?
He asked, cracking off another shot to send one of the gargoyles down permanently. I shrugged and turned back to the horde of gargoyles with a grin of my own. Play with me, I asked one who was warily approaching me, unsure whether I was ally or foe. It cocked its head in confusion. I reached out, grabbed its throat, and crushed the stone in my fist. The head toppled to the ground with a heavy thud. I pointed at one of the wing gargoyles. You're next. The gargoyle let out a dusty roar, wings snapping out as if preparing to fly. Not today. I rushed the gargoyle, batting down one of its wings as it crouched to take the air. The wing shattered under my fist, knocking the beast off balance. Then I punched it straight in the nose, knocking it clean off. The gargoyle stumbled, preparing to defend itself, but I kicked it in the chest so hard that its head flew off from the abrupt whiplash. The body skidded into the last few gargoyles, knocking them down like bowling pins.
Strike!
I roared. Gunner's gun blasted until two straggler gargoyles died at his feet. He was panting as he jogged towards me. I didn't wait. I dove into the pile of gargoyles like a wrestler, trapping a leg here, an arm there, until I found a hold. An armbar tore off its appendage completely, and then I punched its throat until I felt pavement on the other side. A blow to the side of my head made me see stars for a few seconds, and then Gunner's gun blasted off the sucker-punching gargoyle's head from inches away. My ears rang, and I could feel some of the stone sliding off my face where I had been hit, leaving naked, vulnerable skin underneath. Gunner noticed immediately.
We need to finish this fast, before your armor fades completely.
I nodded back, but was picked up in a bear hug from behind. I kicked out with my heel and connected with the gargoyle's knee, shattering it so that he fell down. As my feet touched ground again, I angled my head to protect the soft skin and headbutted his nose with the back of my skull. He fell back immediately, tottering on his one good leg. I turned, crouched, and Superman tackled him down to the ground. Gunshots continued as I pummeled the statue until only dust remained of his neck. All was silent. I looked up to see Gunner scanning the area.
I think that's all of them, he said. But we need to get out of here before someone shows up and starts asking questions. I'll tell the cops that we drove by here when we heard the shots, but saw only broken statues in the road. Can you do something about your appearance?
He asked with a wry grin. I nodded, climbing to my feet as more pieces of the armor slid off of their own accord. With little effort, the rest of the armor began cascading down my body like roof tiles, crashing to the road in piles of slate. After a few seconds, I could feel the wind on my skin again, and rub them for the warmth. The stone armor had been cold. I was now covered in dust like some vagrant homeless person. I might get your car a little dirty. Gunner shrugged.
Nothing to be done about that.
He checked the car for scratches, but other than the first scratch, it was surprisingly unharmed. As we pulled out, Gunner spoke.
That wasn't too bad. That's too much to be a coincidence.
He paused, face thoughtful.
Someone is gunning for us. But the question is who? The dragons?
I nodded. It was either the dragons, or there was a third player in the game. Gunner was right. It was just too unlikely to be a coincidence. But I couldn't imagine who else it could be, or why they would use such an obscure way to take us out. I mean, they were dragons. Why wouldn't they just eat us? Or burn us? Gunner interrupted my thoughts.
This might be a bad scene, Nate. You up for it?
I grunted affirmation, watching the warehouse pass by us as Gunner finally found our destination. We pulled into a parking spot just outside a trio of flashing police cars. Put on your party dress. It seems like all the boys showed up for this one. Let's crash the ball, shall we? I asked. Gunner grinned, opening his door, and strutting like a peacock, as no less than a dozen Illinois police stared open-jawed at the brilliant Aston Martin parked just outside the tape. The severe contrast of such a specimen in such a seedy district was perfectly satisfying.
It's nice to have a billionaire as a friend. You know that,
he laughed. With a nod, we strode towards the barricade like gods among men. At least that's what Gunner looked like. I hoped to establish the same sense of self-confidence as I followed behind him, covered in dust and gravel.
Psh.
A billionaire vagrant for a friend. More like it. Chapter 19. We were quickly past the horde of police officers and into the shop. Thanks in no small part to the heap of silent questions behind their eyes, as they glanced from the towering Norwegian FBI werewolf in their midst, to the gleaming sports car parked a dozen yards ahead of them, to the dusty and dirty celebrity billionaire, civilian, in tow. They lifted the tape for us to enter.
Need backup, Agent Randolph? It's pretty disturbing.
Not necessary,
Give us a few moments in private. The store was in shambles. Paperback and buckram books decorated the floor, torn open to leave loose pages lying about like the useless guts of an eviscerated animal, fury smoldering deep down inside my stomach as if I were looking at heaps of dead children lying about the room instead. Books were my children. It was sacrilegious. Hundreds of spiny silver needles covered the scene, as if a dozen chrome porcupines had exploded in a last act of martyrdom against the written word. Glancing about, I noticed that the needles were embedded into the walls, bookshelves, tables, and even through one of the side window panes, shattering glass out onto the street. Kneeling, I spotted faint droplets of blood on some of their tips. Gunner was still, scanning the small shop from the center of the carnage, the calm eye of a hurricane. Then he stiffened. I turned to follow his gaze, and I couldn't help but take an involuntary step back. On the far wall, the owner of the establishment hung 6 feet off the ground, crucified by much larger silver stakes at each appendage. Some of the wounds had shed more blood than the others, staining the wall in a viscous smear as it made its way down to the floor. For instance, the one spearing the man's genitals into the brick wall had bled the most, belying that it was one of the first inflicted. I shuddered at the thought, remembering my close encounter with the net-launched web the night before that had almost made me permanently sterile. Gunner arched a brow.
Pretty sick. Who carries around a bunch of stakes to hammer a person into a wall?
I pushed back the emotions that were screaming for me to run away and stepped closer to the body. It was riddled with tiny silver needles as well, like a bad advertisement for acupuncture. He had not died easily. I climbed onto a nearby table and studied the large stakes. After a moment, I glanced back at Gunner. They weren't hammered into him. Gunner scoffed, stepping closer.
Then how in the hell were they?
He blinked, noticing the polished, rounded edges of the stakes. No hammer marks marred their surface. I reached out and tentatively touched the cold metal. My mind immediately crumbled, folding in on itself in utter defeat. I was falling, falling down into a black abyss with no one to catch me, and I was screaming with no one to hear me. Indy's words came back.
Who's there to catch you, Nate?
My subconscious immediately answered.
No one. No one cares enough to catch you. You're all alone. Who are you to fight something this strong? You don't stand a chance. You should just leave it all alone and go back to your shop. I was terrified. Completely terrified, and I was still falling into the blackness, a blackness like a thousand dying suns.
Something struck me across the face like a bitch slap from Jesus. I grunted in shock, my head instantly clearing up as everything came back into focus. I wasn't falling. I wasn't alone. That hadn't been my thoughts. I realized that I'd fallen down from the table, and that Gunner was holding me protectively on the ground.
Nate! You okay? What happened?
I grunted, fumbling my shaky arms to hold myself up. He let go and slid back a few feet, watching me nervously. My eyes watered from the blow, and my head rang, but I wasn't angry with him. He might have just saved my sorry ass. I looked back up at the body and felt breakfast ready to come back up, so I quickly turned away, breathing deeply. Hangover plus dead body equals projectile vomit.
They were.
I shivered convulsively for a second, the fear trying to overtake me again. I managed to take a breath and try again.
They were cast at him. Thrown.
Gunner looked from me to the man spread eagled on the wall.
Cast? Thrown? Do you have any idea what kind of precision that would take?
I nodded. Positive. And to hold this? I studied the man. 190-pound weight into a brick wall requires unbelievable force. I turned to face him. This was a dragon, for sure. The same mind magic as the raven tried to use is present here, except much stronger. Instead of lust, this one used fear. Unparalleled fear. She mind-fucked me just by touching the metal, and that was, what, 12 hours later? Gunner nodded, remembering the details from the cops outside. I can't imagine what this man experienced before he died. He didn't even deal in the type of circles that would come close to what Raven asked me for. Studying some of the book covers on the floor, I growled angrily.
History. He was a fucking history book dealer. Nothing even remotely spooky. They must be getting desperate.
Gunner nodded, eyes darting to the body again.
Another dragon, with silver stakes.
He sighed hesitantly.
Your ball.
I stared, momentarily clueless. And then it hit me. Silver stakes were anathema to a werewolf. To hear that one of these beasts harnessed such weapons was beyond scary, even for me. But to Gunner, it was deathly so. I didn't think of that. I guess this one's on me. Gunner nodded slowly. You know, our partnership feels one-sided, Gunner. I'm handling all the nasties while you read reports. Very bureaucratic of you. He grinned, but seemed unhappy about it.
But I'll be here for motivation. From a distance. With a wall between us.
He glanced at the brick wall holding up the body.
A couple walls between us, but I'll be there. Cheering you on with a megaphone. You little dragon slayer, you.
He said, unashamedly. As a werewolf, Gunner could handle a world of pain, but he wasn't immortal. One stake to the chest in his world would end in a blazing eternity of pain, or so I had read. Not a simple death for a werewolf, more like a Dante's Inferno, seventh circle of hell type of death. Gee, thanks, I muttered. I looked at the corpse one last time, and then spoke to Gunner. Mind if I send him off? Gunner shook his head. I didn't bother with the coins, but spoke the words, filling them with my power.
Requiescat in pace.
The familiar wail of a horn rumbled deep inside my chest, and Charon drifted out of nowhere to pluck the victim's soul away from the body, laying it down in his boat as he continued on, nodding once at me in gratitude before he slipped out the front door. Of course the cops outside saw nothing. They were blind to beings such as Charon, and Charon only took the souls of regulars, as opposed to taking the entire body like he had with Raven. Gunner shook his head, and began taking pictures of the corpse in situ, various angles and close-ups. Cop stuff. Me, being utterly deficient at police procedure, decided to go peruse the items in the store, verifying and cataloging the victim selection. Had the owner's loving fingers brushed off that particular buckram cover recently. I used my toe to flip over several books, glancing here and there at loose pages. The wind howled through the broken window, hungry to be the first to explore the virgin building's insides, and then abscond with the equivalent of a pair of panties for its conquest. In this case, a collection of pages from the destroyed books. I sat down in a clear area of the floor amidst the chaos, quieting my mind, and drew a mental circle about me, lacing it with power. I needed to think. One by one, I blocked out my senses. First, sound. The fluttering pages. The incessant clicking of Gunner's camera, the general creaking of the building, the muffled voices of the police outside, and then the wind. I closed my eyes to kill visual feedback, then smell, and then touch. Next came sensations of a rather difficult to explain nature, the sense of life lingering in the room from Gunner and I, the sense of death from the corpse on the wall, and then the overwhelming sensation of love that stained every article in the room. It covered everything. The books, the tables, the windows, and even the walls. The owner had dearly loved his establishment, not looking at it as merely a potential source of income, but as a living being, demanding all the requirements for life. Nourishment from books, care from the owner, praise from sales and contented customers, and vitality from the elements that was the store itself. The wood, windows, floors, insulation, stairs, furniture, and even the pot of coffee on the back table. The place was alive, and to think clearly, I needed to first empathize that life, and then discard it. Finally content, I floated in blackness, complete peace. I had to fight my mind in order to remind it that this was nothing like the blackness I had just experienced from touching the silver stake. This was a peaceful tranquility with no sense of falling or fear. I managed it, barely. In my mind, I folded myself comfortably into a wing-back chair that was suddenly floating in the emptiness. Then, as if it were the most normal thing in the world, I flipped on a Tiffany lamp sitting on a stand beside me. It was dark in my imagination, both literally and emotionally. I whipped out an aging leather journal and began jotting down notes, all the information I had acquired over the last week that might be relevant to the dragons or my parents was splashed onto the journal. All in question form. And then I took a calming sip of a mint julep sitting on the table beside me, contemplating anything else I might have missed. Satisfied, I set the journal down in my lap and finished my drink, enjoying the cooling freshness of the beverage. I glanced down at my writing, thinking calmly. Dragons. Dragons were searching my city for a family book. Sons of the Dying Sun. Killing anyone who got in their way, allegedly, even my parents. My father and Raven had both mentioned tomorrow's solar eclipse, which had attracted thousands of tourists to the convention center, where speakers had arrived from all over the world to discuss the science, physics, and even mystical extrapolations of such an event. Some kid client wanted me to find a book that also had something to do with dragons. Dragon hunters had a mark on a particularly dangerous dragon they believed to be in town. My shop had been broken into, and I had just survived a random hate crime by a truckload of gargoyles while driving to the scene of another dragon attack. Maybe that last one was just my luck. I couldn't think of any particular danger surrounding the eclipses in history, so what was so important about this one? Perhaps when this scene was finished, I could go do some research on dragons and eclipses. To be honest, I knew nothing more than your average idiot about them. Arcane master of knowledge and wisdom, a wizard should be. But there were simply too many myths and fables to study to know them all before one might encounter them in the real world. I wasn't one of those librarian warrior Grimm brothers. I needed ammunition. That settled. I spent the rest of my solitude pondering possibilities of tonight's encounter with Asterion. How would a reformed Buddhist want a duel? What would it consist of? Good old-fashioned arm wrestle? Political debate? Chess? Surprisingly, none of these seemed appropriate. I came back to myself to find Gunnar finished with the scene. He was flipping through a particularly old book without interest, restless. His heightened sense of smell had to make this place exceptionally unpleasant. He saw me move and place the book down, waiting for me to speak. I stretched out my legs, careful of any silver needles, waiting for the feeling to come back from my meditation. After a minute, I stood, and he spoke.
We have to find this book soon if we want to stop the killing.
I stretched my calves languorously. I think I know a way. A way that might actually get us ahead of them, but it might skirt some gray areas with the law. I added the last bit carefully. Gunnar studied me for a long while in silence.
How about I have my men do their job and pretend I didn't hear whatever you just said? You can be on your merry way and do whatever it is you feel like doing while they work the scene. In a couple of hours we will have a chat and perhaps we'll have information to share with each other.
My eyes widened. Gunnar was a stickler for protocol, but here he was, urging me to do whatever would get us results. I simply nodded at him. Good idea. Why don't you drop me off at Plato's cave, and I'll call an old friend. He nodded, turning his back on the scene and heading out of the building. I followed behind him like a good little sidekick. In some cases, it could be helpful to have a cavalry behind you, like the FBI. But in many other ways, it slowed them down, making them impotent to perform as agilely as was often necessary when dealing with sociopathic freaks. Chapter 20. The Illinois cops watched us as we left, already being bombarded by FBI agents parked nearby. They didn't seem in the least bit upset about passing off the responsibility of this particularly grim crime scene. They seemed elated, in fact.
Agent Jeffries,
Gunner called to one of his men. A slim, rough, Midwestern-looking man came up to us obediently. He reminded me of Chuck Norris, an American good old boy.
Yes, sir.
His voice was light but gravelly, with a faint Texas twang.
Take over for me. I'm going back to HQ to look into some other leads on this sick bitch.
Yes, sir. You found out if it was a woman?
Jeffries asked.
Yep,
I answered for Gunner. Jeffries shot me an appraising glance.
You must be Nate.
He corrected himself.
Master Temple.
It wasn't mocking, merely obliging a deluded person their wishes. I nodded, maintaining eye contact with my face still grim from the crime scene. He studied me harder.
How are you possibly going to help us catch this bitch? Pay her off?
I smiled back darkly. Kill her, maybe, but definitely not catch. He looked surprised, turning from me to Gunner.
Pardon?
Gunner maintained his poker face, but I knew he was just as surprised, so I elaborated. I assume that your men have an idea what we're dealing with. The real story, not the politically correct report. And also about my specialty. Gunner nodded.
They saw the video with the tail, and we were briefed last night. They don't know about your specialty, though.
Gunner grinned.
But word circulated pretty fast about how my boyfriend bought me a new car.
Jeffrey smiled. I chuckled. Okay. Catching her will be impossible. She breeds fear into all of those near her. This crime scene is more than 12 hours old, and when I touched the body, I simply collapsed, overwhelmed with panic. I'm sure I don't have to tell you this, but make sure you have gloves in there, or else things could be difficult.
Why in the hell did you touch the body? You could have ruined crucial evidence,
Jeffries said, furious. I waved a hand dismissively. The dragon that attacked here was silver, not gray as in color, but silver, as in the precious metal.
Okay, how does a civilian possibly expect to help us catch a...
He paused, as if not believing he was about to say it out loud.
A silver dragon?
I couldn't blame him. I mean, dragons, come on. I waggled my fingers dramatically. Remember, kill, not catch. It's my forte. Doubt was still apparent on his face, so I glanced around me, judging the proximity of the other policemen. You trust him for a little show and tell, Gunner? Gunner smiled with amusement.
Light petting only.
I could have called a ball of fire. I could have summoned a miniature whirlwind. I could have made him freezing cold. I could have done so many things, but not many knew my secret. And with the cops, that was a cover I hoped to maintain as long as possible. I merely trapped him in icy wires that none around us could see. I extended my hand, offering for him to shake it. Jeffries couldn't move, his eyes wide. My, my. Such a lack of courtesy among men these days. Really, Agent Jeffries, it's considered the height of impropriety not to shake an offered hand. The tough man's eyes widened further. To me, it looked like when you went out and bought a Christmas tree, and they wrap it up nice and tight in that plastic net so that you can fit the monstrosity on top of your car, but I was the only one who could see the fine threads of barbed wire-like cords. His mouth opened and closed wordlessly as he struggled for a few more seconds before giving up.
You're a...
He glanced about cautiously to make sure we were alone. Point for him.
Wizard?
He whispered finally. I let him go, nodding, as if he had commented on the weather. He shivered again, but his composure wasn't broken.
So the stories are all true. If you can do that without even trying, then I'm not ashamed to say that the idea of this dragon's magic overpowering you scares me shitless.
I play for keeps, Agent Jeffries, which means I am not going to risk a capture. I will just make sure this bitch dies quick, if I have any say about it. Jeffries nodded, but glanced to his superior.
He's obviously got secrets, but he's still a civilian. How are we going to describe the outcome if we end up killing her? I don't think there are even rules about this kind of thing.
Statistically speaking, you can get away with murder, I said quietly. They both stared at me, slightly horrified. I shrugged. Gunner finally spoke, pointing a thumb at me.
He's one scary fuck, that's for sure. But you have to let me handle Agent Reinhardt. This is the whole point of our new team. We must step out of the lines, but only when we have to. I'd like to keep my conscience as clear as possible.
He turned a decisive eye to me.
We are not assassins.
Agent Jeffries glanced from Gunner back to me, studying me curiously.
How have you kept it a secret for so long? You are famous. Does anyone else know?
Several people, but if anyone finds out prematurely, let me just say that I will know exactly who leaked the information, and what I just did was only foreplay. He blinked.
Are you threatening federal agent?
I touched my chest innocently.
Who, me?
I made my glare heat his face, literally. To him it must have felt like an oven door opening from inches away. He staggered back with a surprised grunt. My smile never wavered.
Okay, okay. I'll play nice. As long as you do, too.
I nodded. I didn't know what steps I could or could not take without ruining things, so I merely trusted Gunner to keep me out of the frying pan when it came to the red tape. Just make sure I toe the line according to your procedures. I wouldn't want to mess anything up. You trust me to be scary, and I'll trust you to make sure I'm as bureaucratic as possible. The word tasted foul on my tongue.
Bureaucratic is not a word you are familiar with. Not at all.
I motioned for them to follow me over to Gunner's car. Jeffrey spoke up once we were out of earshot of the other cops.
Why don't you tell me what your attacker looked like so we can put out a description to the local law enforcement?
Wise advice, but totally impossible for me to reveal since we had killed her. We had to keep that secret or face jail time, or at least a trial. And I didn't want to air out my dirty laundry to these pristine officers. I also didn't want to go to jail, or see Peter go to jail for simply protecting Gunner. With magic. Fuck. This was getting complicated. Withholding information while trying to pass out crumbs to help them. I wanted to help, but I was just as out of my depth. I was not a team player. At least not as big of a team player as you had to be part of the varying police branches. But I had to say something. We won't be seeing her anytime soon. She jumped a boat out of town after our encounter and said that her sisters would finish off what she had started. There. All true statements. Sandwiched between a fuckload of emptiness. Agent Jeffries watched me with cop eyes. I fought not to look guilty, opening up my power to calm me, slow my pulse, and ease my breathing.
Just tell him, Agent Jeffries. He won't shut up if you don't, and it would just be more embarrassing for him.
Gee, thanks, Gunner.
I had no idea what was going on, so I waited. Agent Jeffries' eyes were harder than before, like brittle diamonds.
Sugar-coated lies. My favorite,
he said. I blinked.
Pardon?
I asked. You would fucking dare to. Gunner laid a hand on my arm, smiling.
Wait, Nate. Just hear him out.
I folded my arms across my chest, checking my power so that I wouldn't blow Agent Jeffries across the parking lot.
Okay.
What's so funny, Gunner? I finally asked.
Tell him the color of the car is black.
I frowned, but complied.
Lie.
Agent Jeffrey said softly. So his IQ is around a 24, I spat. Gunner sighed.
Say anything then, true or false, and hear what Jeffries has to say. Tell me if he's right or wrong.
Okay, I'd bite. I had a killer poker face. I disinherited $7 billion. Agent Jeffries didn't even hesitate.
Lie.
Gunner looked startled at my statement, but arched an eyebrow in question. He's right. It was 8. They both stared back, dumbfounded. Let me try again, I said, determined.
Wait a minute. You inherited $8 billion last night?
Gunner whispered violently. I just nodded, trying harder to trip up Agent Jeffries. He leaned back on the hood, concentrating. I've been in an orgy. Agent Jeffries immediately grinned, impressed.
True.
Gunner choked on something, starting a violent coughing fit. Damn. I voted for Obama.
Definitely a lie.
I dug deeper. My parents were murdered. Agent Jeffrey stared back.
You aren't sure.
Was this a power, or was he just damn good at reading people? I opened my mouth for one more, but Gunner had regained his composure and interrupted me.
He could sense lies.
I started to protest. But Gunner held up one big Viking hand.
I'll prove it.
I grumbled, leaning back on the car too. Gunner was silent for a time, but when he spoke, it was a doozy.
I am a werewolf,
he said, smiling as if it were a game. I jumped up.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Sounds like Gunner lost his fucking mind there for a second. Excuse us, Agent Jeffries, but I think we'll be leaving now. Agent Jeffries slowly turned to Gunner. Face serious, not hearing me. Was Gunner trying to lose his job? I didn't know anyone who had blatantly outed themselves like this before. I know some had been caught shifting on video, but this was a first for damn sure.
True,
Agent Jeffries finally whispered. I looked from one to the other, wondering if I had just become Gunner's new source of income. He was fucked. No one would keep a known werewolf on the books. The first admitted werewolf in the government, at that. Gunner took a step towards Agent Jeffries.
Trade for trade. You told me your secret, so I told you mine. Only fair,
Gunner said calmly.
And there is a group of crazy bitches hurting innocent people in our town. But now, more importantly, do you still trust me?
He set his shoulders and used a hand to lift Agent Jeffrey's jaw, so they locked eyes. What would Gunner do if things went wrong? I didn't even know what the FBI would do when they found out. Would they just fire him? Or hunt him down like a criminal?
Like an animal? You don't even have to ask the question, Randolph. Of course I won't tell. You've saved my ass more than a few times, and I would never forget that.
That might be enough for Gunner, but not enough for me, I said protectively. Jeffries abruptly drew a knife and sliced his finger before I could even react. Then he did the impossible. I felt the hum of power instantly surround him in a small circle. He knelt with one knee up, touched his forehead with the bloody finger, and then looked at Clean.
I swear that I will never betray you, Gunner Randolph. Or Nate Temple.
Shit. He knew more than just how to sense lies. He knew a bit of arcane ritualistic magic. The circle snapped shut like a rubber band, and I knew that he would never be able to break his oath. Over time, people had begun to assume that the ritual Jeffries had just performed was merely a formality, and he had decided to simply trust another man's word, his honor. But it had begun here, with this ritual, when one literally swore an oath that could not be broken. Gunner arched a brow at me, surprised himself. I nodded back. He's telling the truth. He literally cannot betray either of us now, no matter what. My voice sounded surprised, and I didn't even care to hide it. Gunner smiled down at him.
Thank you, Jeffries, but it really wasn't necessary.
Jeffries nodded.
It was for him.
He pointed a thumb back at me as he stood, tucking the blade away into a pocket.
Well, he does know how to make a fucking point. I can do nothing but trust him on this now. Because there's no way for him to renege on his oath.
Where did you learn that, Jeffries?
My parents,
was all he said. Looking to Gunner, he continued.
All this time I thought I was the only freak around. It's good to know that I'm not alone. I can't wait to work with you two, even though he's a sieve,
Jeffries said with a grin at me. A sieve who can kick some serious ass when necessary, I argued. He nodded back. An agent was walking our way now, obviously intent on interrupting us. Jeffries spoke.
I need to get back to the scene.
Gunner nodded back.
You do that. I'll be on my cell. Get back to me as soon as you hear something. We'll chat later.
Jeffries turned to intercept the agent. Gunner looked at me and shrugged at the look on my face. I silently climbed into the car, saying nothing. He started the car and began to pull out from the curb, heading deeper into the seedy warehouse district. We drove in silence for a time. Then the skin between my shoulders began to itch, as if I were being watched. I glanced out the window, but blew it off as simple weirdness from the conversation I had just experienced, and the brief attack by the gargoyles. Gunner finally broke the silence.
Did you really inherit that much money?
I turned to him, thinking.
What time is it?
I asked. He glanced at the dash and told me. It's increased about half a million by now, then. Gunner stared at me, eyes lifted in confusion. Interest, I added, as I looked back out the window. Gunner was silent for a time.
Nate,
I heard him ask.
Yeah?
He was silent for a few seconds.
You said there were nicer cars than this.
I ran it on him, blinking in disbelief.
Are you really about to bitch about not getting a nicer car?
I bellowed. We were about a mile away from the scene in a deserted stretch of a vacated warehouse, probably converted to crack houses now. He shook his head and opened his mouth to answer, but the back of the car suddenly shuddered, and the whole back windshield blew into the car, raining pebbles of glass over both of us as the car began to skid, the sound of screeching tires mingling with the tinkling of broken glass. When Gunner and I had stopped screaming, and he had regained control of the car, I turned back to see what had hit us. Gunner merely gunned it, screaming,
"No fucking way!"
A silver dragon was chasing us down the street, long neck stretching her beautiful chrome head no further than a yard away, as she kept up with us going 60 miles an hour. Her silver scales slid and writhed against each other like a computer technician's wet dream.
"Hello, boys. I think you might know where to find a book I was hoping to peruse,"
she purred. Not even out of breath.
"Decepticon!"
I yelled, frantically saying the first thing that came to mind. She let out an erotically sensual peal of laughter, that tightened my pants with the thrill of dark sex. Fantasy dark sex. The kind that only belongs in the back of the mind where one knows they will never actually act upon it. The thrill and danger of pleasurable pain. I was too startled to break her wave of fear and power. She had caught me off guard, and now I felt like I was drowning in that dark pleasure pain. Nothing I could do but ride it. Gunner and I had already lost. She was just too powerful. Then Gunner snapped me out of it with another strong Viking slap to the face. His eyes were wide as I came back to myself.
"Do something, Nate!"
Gunner bellowed. Panicked afresh at my choice of words combined with the mountain of werewolf kryptonite on our bumper. I was her only hope. As long as Gunner could keep us away from her claws and jaws, I was free to battle this legend in the seedy warehouse district in which we were racing. Chapter 21. 2 times in 2 hours was simply not acceptable. I had had enough near-death experiences in my life to know that I didn't particularly enjoy them. Now, having overcome all those past scenarios was definitely preferable, but it was getting ridiculous how many times I found myself in them. And the baddies always got bigger, stronger, and meaner, while I seemed to remain the same. Totally unfair. Her power swamped me like a lead blanket, making me shake and break out into a cold sweat as I struggled to grasp hold of my own power that was screaming defiantly deep inside my core. She was simply too strong to battle solely within the mind. I idly wondered how old she was, and how many decades or centuries she had to perfect her talents.
How many centuries I have been alone.
Her thoughts invaded my own, meshing together seamlessly.
It's helpless. Just give in. I can take away all the pain in the world, so that you only have to live with me. No more responsibilities. No more fear of death. No more stress. I will protect you. Why would you want to fight someone who only wanted to help you?
Another slap from Gunner snapped me out of it, almost unhinging my jaw. I reacted instantly, using my fear and the pain to do something, anything, that would help us get out of here. I whipped up a wall of razor-thin air, hoping to slice her ankles off, or at least trip her up, so that maybe she ran into a building. I casted out the rear windshield like a tripwire, about a foot off the ground. It caught her immediately, and she let out a very human shriek of pain and rage, momentarily shattering her onslaught of mind magic. My magic cut into her huge reptilian feet, tripping her up expertly, but after her first roll over a random parked car, squashing it beyond oblivion, her wings caught air, and she gracefully regained control. She landed back on her feet easily and resumed her pursuit, yards further back from us, but still too close for comfort. At least she had a slight limp. She let out a roar that shattered windows in the blur of warehouses. Car alarms began squawking within a full block. We had to be going 80 miles an hour, but she was still keeping pace. I had to think of something. I extended my shield of power over both Gunner and I, hoping to protect us from her magic before it caught hold. Using magic to protect myself, like I had with the stone griffins, wouldn't keep Gunner safe, and I was reasonably sure it wouldn't do much to impede her anyway. So I had to think outside the box. I spotted a street sign racing towards us and instantly knew what to do. Our only choice, if I could pull it off. Gunner, get onto the Eads Bridge. He turned to me, eyes wide.
No, there are too many innocent drivers up there. Whatever you're going to do, do it here. It can't be worth the risk to go up there.
I wanted to scream as she let out another roar behind us, making Gunner swerve a little, startled. I grabbed the wheel and turned us onto the on-ramp with a screech of tires before Gunner could argue.
It's our only chance. Stay near the rail, and I'll take her out.
Gunner was forced to regain control of the car, but he spit out a curse in my direction.
How many will die with your plan, Nate?
I hope none. I really do. But it's our only chance. She's too strong. My phone rang, making me jump in surprise. Not recognizing the number, I hit the speakerphone.
Really? A fucking phone call? Now?
Gunner yelled between offensive driving. I ignored him, speaking urgently.
Temple, kinda busy. Who is this?
I glanced back behind us, hoping the dragon took the bait. She let out a roar of pleasure at us directing the chase to a place with so much potential for collateral damage. So much more fear to feed on from innocent drivers. but I was sure I caught the faintest hesitation in her features, just like Raven in the bookstore. Then it was gone, and she was chasing us anew. The voice of the car chose that moment to go haywire from the impact of her first attack against the rear end of the vehicle, frightening us all over again. Door ajar, door ajar. Then the voice garbled, and a fizzle erupted somewhere behind the dash. Car horns blared around us as Gunner swerved back and forth, zipping nimbly between them. The voice on the phone was bubbly.
Wow. Okay. You do sound busy. Are you in a parade or something? I didn't know anything was happening today.
Facts! Speak faster, or I'll hang up! I screamed against the wind, tearing through the open windows. As we careened through traffic, I was glad to see that we were out of the dragon's reach. Then she swiped a car into the median with a powerful backhand, and I cringed. The driver stared at the dragon, frozen and utter disbelief. I noticed he was alone in the car, and was grateful. No kids in the back seat to worry about. I take solace wherever I can. The car thankfully skidded without flipping airborne, but that seemed to only infuriate the dragon more.
Right, right, sorry,
the voice on the phone apologized. Our car's voice momentarily interrupted her.
Low fuel. Look at the nearest fueling station at your earliest convenience.
The sexy British female voice had begun to transform into a demonically possessed version of the childhood speak-and-spell toy.
Now entering Solod. Your destination on Friday.
It grew worse by the second. The phone spoke again, sensing the press of limited time.
Oh, I didn't realize you had company. I work for you. I'm Abby. Miss Belmont informed me to tell you that when you were inputting your personal information into the system, a private video feed popped up in a queue for you to watch. One of the security cameras, as far as we can tell. The system will not allow us to access it. If you could swing by here and check it out, that would be fantastic. I think it's from the room of...
Her voice grew soft.
The attack.
I blinked, momentarily forgetting the chasing dragon behind us.
The attack on my parents?
I asked, punctuated by another dragon roar in the distance.
Yes, Master Temple. When shall I tell her you will be here?
In an hour or two, hopefully.
Gunner interrupted, snatching my phone.
Right. Thanks. Bye.
He tossed it back to me, glaring.
First dragon, then company. People are going to die if we don't stop her. Do something. Soonest.
I nodded, shaking my head free of the sudden emotions as I numbly pocketed the phone. A security feed from the room of my parents' deaths. That might hold one of those elusive clue thingies. Another roar startled me back to the present. Glancing back, I saw the dragon inhale sharply, so I quickly prepared another volley of power, using my sudden emotion for energy. I had seen the red dragon do a similar thing when she had been about to let loose her napalm fire on the roof. I used the same tactic, hoping they hadn't shared war stories. I let fire roil inside me, drawing heat from anywhere and everywhere, willing it into existence until I could see it clearly in my mind. I saw cars on the opposite side of the highway slowing down as I drew the heat from their engines, even seizing some of them to an abrupt halt, much to their sudden panic. Or maybe they just had stopped to stare at the freaking dragon tearing after us. I shook my head, building the fire hotter and hotter, our own car slowing down.
Nate, what are you doing? We're slowing down.
Shut up, Gunner. I screamed as the power threatened to burn my blood to ashes. I had never called this much fire before, and I knew it was at my limit or possibly even beyond it. When the pain began to make stars in my eyes, I let it loose like a rocket launcher. It slammed into her snout, just as she began to spit silver spears into another car. The fire halted most of the silver, slamming it back down her throat, causing her to slam down to the ground on all fours, sliding across the concrete highway, her talons clawing into the asphalt like a hot knife through butter. Our car abruptly tore forward, compensating for the floored gas pedal as I stopped pulling the heat from the engine. Gunner swerved around another car, honking and screaming at them to get out of the way. They obliged in sheer panic. I turned back to see the dragon retching a car-sized lump of steaming silver onto the road, like a cat with one of those vile hairballs they seem to be able to produce at the worst possible moments. She shook her head once, and then launched into the sky. A state patrol car slammed into the pile of silver before the cop could dodge it, no doubt racing after us for help, and the car instantly flipped up into the air, somersaulting wildly. I imagine the screams from inside. Was he a family man? Was he close to retiring? Or was he maybe a new rookie on the force, hoping to change the world? I sensed the dragon's pulse of power and realized she was toying with me again. I steeled my resolve, blocking out the cries in my own head as the cop died. There was no question. If he hadn't died from the first impact, the heightened speed of the second impact with the road would surely finish him off. He was already dead. I swallowed the lump of guilt, blocking the dragon's power of fear from my mind. But before the cop car could strike the ground, the dragon swooped down and caught the wreckage in a snatch of talons, sharply banking away to continue her pursuit, beside us, over the churning river on the other side of the bridge's rails. I stared into the driver's side, hoping to see the cop alive, knowing the odds were against him. If I did what I was about to do, he was going to die anyway. One life to protect so many others. It was a sacrifice that made a small part of me die inside. But I had no other choice. Gunner roared in fury next to me, partially shifting form so that huge, beefy wolf arms gripped the steering wheel as he spotted the cop car dangling over the Mississippi River levee.
"Nate, do something!"
I nodded, still searching, hoping the cop was still alive. Then an elbow punched through the window, and it was a fucking girl. Not a mature, battle-hardened woman of the force, but a young and small, beautiful female cop. She was suddenly leaning out of the shattered glass, firing at the dragon's underbelly without the slightest fear. First Spider-Man, and now Wonder Woman. The dragon let out a shriek of furious pain and then looked into my eyes as we sped alongside her. She smiled broadly at me and then dropped the car into the icy river, smiling as she ate up the surprise and fear for the cop's life tearing through my eyes. The cop would die in the frigid water of the Mississippi River because I hadn't acted sooner. Not today. I yelled incoherently as I half-leaned out of the open passenger window, ignoring the broken bits of glass. I heard the cop scream as she fell several stories down into the dark water. Pedestrians on the walkway were running in panic, screaming in disbelief. The city was about to discover that their beloved temple heir was a wizard. And I didn't give one flying fuck. I called the weather to my command like a cloak, drawing every molecule of water from every cloud within a mile, and then I reached even further. I had never been that great with weather, but it was still all I could think to do. She was made of metal, and I was hoping that she wouldn't have passed swimming lessons as a young dragonling. The weather responded instantly, water slamming into the vacuum I had created in the dragon's chest. Every crack in her body, every millimeter of space between scales, was suddenly filled with water, weighing her down dramatically. And then I did the opposite of what I had done a few minutes ago. I simultaneously withdrew all heat from her body and cast the frigid temperature from the river below into those same water molecules, freezing them instantly. She faltered as ice abruptly creaked in her every joint, preventing her wings from working properly, and then she fell, fast.
Temple!
Her bellow of rage was impressive, but the splash of her massive body hitting the river was even better. Sweet vengeance! Thy name is Temple. Water splashed up so high that we could even see it from above the bridge. Gunner slammed on the brakes, and we bolted out of the car, now sitting sideways on the highway, kicking down one of the maintenance fence doors that separated the pedestrians from the roadway. We leaned over the river and watched the bubbles until they stopped, and all that was left was the cool waves of the Mississippi welcoming the dragon to her new permanent residence at the bottom of the river. Gunner pointed urgently off behind us, and I saw the cop floundering weakly in the water 100 yards back. I thought she would have been further away, and deader. Relief flooded over me as I saw a nearby boat pull up to her and toss her a preserver. She was alive, and the dragon was dead. I collapsed to my knees, crying out in relief, unable to hold myself up. I heard the screech of tires, and then metal slamming into metal where our car was parked. A beautiful ball of fire blossomed up over the Aston Martin. Then the world went black as I passed out from exhaustion. Chapter 22. I woke in the back of an ambulance, wrapped in cheap blankets near the riverfront. I was freezing cold. Draining oneself with as much magic as I had thrown about today had killed wizards before, but somehow I had survived. My thoughts were sluggish, but I saw Gunner talking to another police officer, who was also wrapped in blankets, skin visibly steaming underneath, and it all came back in a blink. I stumbled out of my ride and attempted to walk over to the two of them. Cop cars were everywhere, red and blue lights strobing around us. I had been out for a while, judging by the height of the sun. Then, another thought hit me, and I tripped, barely catching myself. Temple Industries was awaiting me, and so was the Minotaur. A cop instinctively reached out to assist me, but then halted, uncertainty and fear obvious on his face. I scowled at him, and he frowned sheepishly. Gunner and the other officer had noticed my approach and were striding towards me. Gunner hissed at the officer, who had shied from touching me.
"How dare you? He almost died saving Officer Marlin and countless others from a murdering sociopath, and you can't even reach out a hand to keep him from falling down on his face? Is that the kind of thanks St. Louis has to offer?"
His chest was heaving, and I almost fell down again, as his rage suddenly coursed through me like electricity. My skin was buzzing, and my equilibrium wavered as my skin suddenly felt on fire.
"No, sir, it's just that Captain Kosugi said, and the story is about what he did. I was scared to touch him. They say he called down the power of a god to battle a silver demon. I'm not a religious man, but others ran to the nearest church as soon as they could. They're calling him Archangel, or one of the four horsemen. He battled a devil in the middle of a high-speed car chase, and won."
He looked at me.
"I'm sorry, Master Temple. It's just that whatever you did scares me. I don't want to risk my family by being too close to you, or my job when Kosugi hears about all this."
The other officer, Officer Marlin, I presumed, stepped up next to me and wrapped a delicate arm around my shoulder in thanks, supporting my sudden dizziness. She was short, maybe 5'5", and stunning. Her straight, dark, almost black hair would have ended just below her breasts if it hadn't been tied back. Her thin face was perfect for it, and her bright green eyes were fiery with a hidden power that I could only guess at, and were big enough to drown in.
"Now that I'm here, what are your two other wishes?"
I mumbled, feeling slightly giddy from the sudden warmth and power that had filled me upon seeing Gunner. She laughed delightedly, and my heart melted. Girl's laughter just flat did it for me. Her teeth glowed white as she grinned.
"I like him."
Her fingers squeezed my shoulder affectionately, and it was as if the pressure broke something inside me, and then my body coursed with even more energy and power, refreshing me like a long night of sleep followed by a healthy breakfast. Her faith wrapped around me like a giant oak tree trunk for support. I felt stronger, more awake. What the fuck? How was I sensing other emotions, and how was it fueling me? The petite officer spoke again, the blanket making her look frail and delicate, but I sensed there was more to her.
"Well, I, for one, am grateful for this help. Never hurts to be friends with an archangel. You should be ashamed of yourself, officer."
The man's shoulders shrugged in defeat, but he turned and began walking closer to a small crowd of police officers. Then I felt my perception of the world abruptly jolt, like I had experienced only a few times before, and I grew instantly nervous. Not again. A man suddenly darted out of nowhere with a purse tucked under his arm and slammed straight into the departing officer. He fell, dropped the purse, and a slew of jewelry spilled out across the grass. The stunned cop reacted quickly, cuffing him, and then a man and woman burst onto the scene.
"He stole my purse! Thank God you caught him!"
She latched onto her boyfriend in relief. Gunner and I stared at each other in disbelief as the cop carted the man off to a nearby squad car, the couple in tow behind them.
"Odds are never that good. He's either the stupidest criminal in the world, or God is looking down on us," Gunner said softly.
I nodded, but suddenly felt very aware of the power high I was experiencing. The last time I had felt a shift like this, some very strange things had happened around me. Odds had run wild. Things that would have never happened naturally suddenly did. Things like this. Was it happening again? Had I reached a new power plateau, distorting chance all around me? I shrugged, not speaking my fear. Instead, I glanced down at Officer Marlin beside me, changing the topic.
"I'm glad I could help, but
I seem to remember that boat saving you.
Not some archangel. I am no hero. I did what anyone else would have done, and a better man would